This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Listen, we stuff this podcast with ads like Jonathan Sullivan used to stuff his face with hot dogs during the pregame for Saints games. If you don't like the ads, sign up and become a patron today. Patrons get access to this podcast ad-free. No ads ever. And they get the Booze Bundle welcome box, 4 swag items, amazing, and a Saints player card, and you get access to the Discord channel. Why wouldn't you do it? It's 10 bucks. You're practically making money. So do it today. Go to saintshappyhour.com and sign up to become a patron. That's saintshappyhour.com.
This is Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints. What's with this Saints Happy Cast? This has to be the worst Saints podcast in the world. Ralph can't say anyone's name right. Andrew doesn't know football. Everyone has a hard time listening to Dave. And is Kevin even there tonight? The audio with this podcast, my God, the audio, it's painful.
All right, everybody, welcome to a special edition of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It's playoff week with the Saints in Tampa. So me and Andrew, behind the scenes, we were talking about guests that we're going to have, and we're like, we need this, you know, we need to have Dave Mason from Bet Online to talk gambling. We need to have Zach Strief to really preview the game and talk nonsense. And I said to Andrew, I need somebody that can talk Tampa Bay and just that hates them, slanders them, thinks Bruce Arians is terrible, kind of hates their organization, and I need that slander injected into my veins, and I want somebody fun. And Andrew, you said what? You said get Jameis one of one back on the show.
Yeah, well, I also missed it last time you guys had him on, and I felt guilty about that because I slandered him on a podcast before we had him on, and then I wasn't even here to defend myself or apologize to him. So I'm glad that, you know, he has a chance to talk to me now on this podcast and give
me
some grief.
So, one of one, thanks for joining us. I know, and I want to say this is really interesting in that going into Tampa Bay, when they hired Arians, me and Andrew were like, Arians, he's a good coach. He won at Arizona. And I remember finding you on Twitter when the Saints signed Jameis Winston. And I remember you were like, Arians is bad. And you like laid it out and laid all these things out. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think that's true. And I know Tampa went 11-5. They're playing the playoffs. But I got to say, you convinced me. Like, I am not sold on Arians that he is a good coach. I just think he falls into these places with above average talent and doesn't mess it up. Like, I kind of low-key hate him now. Like, I don't think he's a good coach. He throws people under the bus. Like, what is the attitude for him around Tampa Bay, a team that you know well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say Bruce is a bad coach. He's been a coach of the year. You know, he's got a ring as an assistant, of course, not as a head coach like Sean Payton does. Bruce's main issue is his ego. And, you know, his own family has come after me, you know, on Twitter and things of that nature. And Bruce, you know, he could, if he wanted, he could engage, you know, I'd be happy to. And I've said many times, you know, I love Bruce. I love his family. I'm an Orthodox Christian theologian. That's just how I am with everybody. But Bruce Arians is the Mike D'Antoni of NFL coaches. I mean, that's really sort of the perfect comp. It's in a different sport, but that's what he is. He's a guy that, you know, you hire to sort of inject a little fun and, you know, bring his swag, his persona, stuff like that to your organization, to the media. But of course he hasn't won, you know, as a head coach, as far as the ring goes. And his teams generally, you know, they turn the ball over a ton. John Ledyard, he's a guy in Tampa now. He's with, I think it's Pewter Report. You know, and he was big on Arians, and now he's even admitted, because I said before the season started, when they got Brady, I predicted basically the season exactly how it would go. I laid out the advanced metrics, what would change in comparison from Brady to Jameis. You know, I said they'd go 11-5 and earn a wild card spot. And the whole season kind of progressed exactly the way that I thought it would. And the advanced metrics look now, if you go to like Next Gen and Pro Football Reference, exactly as I said they would. And Ledyard even admitted recently that the offense changed. When Brady came in, they did not run the offense this year that they ran with Jameis last year. You know, they recognized, Bruce knew it, Byron Leftwich knew it, Clyde Christensen, the quarterback's coach, knew it. Leftwich and Christensen were both in Jameis' camp. They both wanted them to return. They knew that Brady could not do what Jameis did, and you couldn't ask him to do what Jameis did. His arm's fine, you know, but he doesn't have Jameis' arm. He's not going to make the same throws consistently that Jameis makes. His athleticism, obviously, it's non-existent. And there's a lot more checkdowns this year. The yards per attempt and things of that nature, IAY, CAY, all those things, they're down quite a bit. I'll have a stat coming out in a little bit, probably a few days or so after Tampa season end. But when you look at things like, you know, intended air yards per pass attempt, you know, Jameis was 14% higher than Brady this year. Air yards to the sticks, Jameis was 280% higher, you know. But when you look at the run game, Tampa's getting 18% more yards per game in run support outside the quarterback and 25% better yard per attempt. So their team has changed a lot in 2020 from 2019 based on what they're doing around Brady, because they're not asking him to just carry the offense. So Bruce has changed this year. I would actually say that this is one of his better coaching jobs because he's adapted. I think he finally realized, my system, it doesn't work. It's not going to bring a Super Bowl to anybody. I think he kind of realized he was the Mike D'Antoni of the NFL, and he is. And that's not even really an insult, because even D'Antoni is a decent coach in the NBA. It's just he's looked at as a guy not to get you a ring, but sort of to just inject, you know, fun and excitement into your organization. But that's how I look at Arians as a coach, like a Mike D'Antoni. And then as far as personality-wise, he's a diva. You know, Bruce Arians is about Bruce Arians. He will throw any player under the bus to protect himself. You know, I've talked with guys that were on the Cardinals when Bruce was there, and they know it, and some of the Bucks know it. A lot of the Bucks know it. So that's who Bruce is, but, you know, he wants to get in the Hall of Fame like most coaches. And if he can get a ring, you know, he's got a claim. I mean, he's been, like I said, he's been a coach of the year. If he can get himself a ring, he's got a shot at making a Hall of Fame case. I don't see that happening this year, but you never know.
Let me ask you this. So let's say Jameis would have stayed in Tampa, but everything else, the personnel they got, the defensive support, the run support, the change in the offense. I know you're big on advanced metrics with, I mean, some stuff that I don't even understand in terms of evaluating passers. Where do you think Tampa sits this year in terms of record had Jameis stayed and everything else been the same as this year?
Well, that's an interesting hypothetical. I will say, you know, I don't think that Gronk would have came for Jameis. I think, sure, you know, Gronk would only come for Brady. Same with AB. Now, I do think they probably still would have landed Fournette. They realized last year that, you know, they needed run support. Ronald Jones was...
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the doghouse last year, which was stupid because he was infinitely more talented than Peyton Barber. You know, and yet that was Jameis's starting back. Peyton Barber, that's the guy who got the carries, and Ronald Jones was in Bruce Arians' doghouse, and it was terrible because they just had no run game at all. So I think they still probably would have landed Fournette. I think they still would have drafted Tristan Wirfs. So a lot of their moves would have been the same. I just don't think they ever would have got Gronk or AB. But again, you know, the curse of being talented. And, you know, yes, Brady is in that GOAT conversation. You know, I have him number two behind Otto. And I have him as the Gotsby, the greatest of the Super Bowl era. But I don't think anybody that evaluates quarterback talent or that knows the history of the game would probably put Brady even in the top 50 as far as just talents. He's not that guy. He's definitely not that guy from an athletic profile, and he's not even that guy from an arm talent perspective. So the problem with Jameis was that Jason Light believed in him way too much. He drafted him out of Florida State to be a franchise savior, and he figured that you just hand him the ball and say, carry us, kid. Well, that doesn't work for anybody. Dan Marino, people think it worked for Marino, but I encourage people to go look at Marino's teams when he was young. They had an amazing defense. Everybody forgets about that. Yeah. They think it was just Marino and the Duper and Clayton. It wasn't. They had a great defense. Jameis had garbage for 5 years.
My question to you is how much of Tampa, because that's interesting as Tampa sort of they've evolved over the years. How much of it is Bruce Arians, because Tom Brady, because he's got the 9 Super Bowls and the 6 rings, is where Arians sort of had to bend to Brady and sort of do what Brady wanted to do and help him out and do different things. Whereas if Jameis would have stayed possibly with Arians' ego, he's like, you're Jameis. We're not changing anything, buddy. You ain't won nothing. This is my team, my system. But Brady, he kind of had to like bend to Brady because people will not blame Arians, will not blame Brady if it fails. They'll blame Arians, right? So how much of that do you think was in play? They sort of bent to Brady's will and helped him and did what he wanted to do more so because he's freaking Tom Brady and you have to do what he wants.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's been fun for me seeing how the media has treated the situation in Tampa this year, because Tom is running it. Tom Brady is absolutely running Tampa. I still have connections inside that organization. He's running it. It's not Bruce Arians' show. It's Brady's show. He brought Gronk. He brought AB. He's calling the plays. I saw earlier in the year where people were just crushing Byron Leftwich, and saying he's an idiot and this and that. And that drove me nuts because I don't care what play Byron sends in. Brady has the green light to change everything. So whatever play is being run, if the fans are flipping out saying that was a stupid play and blaming Leftwich, they're blaming the wrong person. Brady's the guy that has the green light for all of it. So, it literally is Tampa Bay. It's whatever Tommy wants. And it's been interesting to see just how Bruce himself has dealt with that, because you've sort of seen in some of the interviews he does, he's even taken some shots at Brady because I think he realized, okay, wait a minute, if this goes wrong, I'm actually going to get blamed this time.
He threw him under the bus hard after the first Saints game. He was like, "Those interceptions, we didn't see that in practice. I don't know what's going on." I was like, "Did you just do that to Brady after the first week?" Andrew, you thought that too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was stunned. I was stunned. I was like, "How does this relationship go?" They even asked Tom Brady about that. They were like, "Well, what are your thoughts on Bruce Arians saying this about you?" And he was just like, "Yeah, new environment. You just got to get used to being around new people."
I look at the media one of one, and I see people saying, if Tampa doesn't win the Super Bowl, it's a bust, it's a failure. But since you're around that organization, I'm curious what the people in the building or fans think. Because if I'm a Tampa fan, I want to win the Super Bowl. They haven't been relevant in 13 years. Last week was the first time they won a playoff game since the Super Bowl. So, like you said, it's Tom Brady. He's injected fun. They're a darling. They're a media team. They're getting all this attention. Like, are they looking at it as Super Bowl and bust, and if they don't win, they'll make changes? How secure and sort of pleased with their season would they be if it ends Sunday, like we hope it will?
Yeah, I would say, you know, with Brady, he's obviously Super Bowl or bust every year. Jason Light, the general manager, and again, Jason's a guy that liked me. You know, he went on personally on a Barstool interview that I was giving when it was, you know, it came out that I was Jason Light, et cetera, et cetera. And he went on there personally while I was on there. But he's blocked me on Twitter now. Like, he doesn't like me anymore now that I'm kind of, like, over on the Saints side. But, okay, so I'll say Brady looks at this as Super Bowl or bust. Arians does as well, but that plays into what I was saying before. Jason Light, though, it's a little different. Jason will do what needs to be done to protect his job. And I don't really mean that as an insult. There's a lot of general managers like that. In fact, probably most. You know, fans think that general managers make every move to win a Super Bowl. That's not the case.
Absolutely
at all.
Not.
There's a lot
that
of general managers.
You're 100%
right. Right. There's a lot of general managers that simply make the move that they feel is the safest and that will give them the most job security. And if they think, you know, there's a move that could add two wins but could add three losses, a lot of times they won't make that move because they have families. They want to make money. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not looking to lose a job and swing for the fences all the time. So Jason Light is a guy that, you know, he would let Jameis take bullets for him, and Jameis would do that. And the same with Bruce. And this is what I had brought up earlier about Brady. You know, Bruce saw it all change quick right after that very first game. I think the people in Tampa kind of realized, oh, we're still not in the Saints class. And Bruce realized real fast when the media got involved that, hey, I can't blame the quarterback anymore. Not really. I can't really get away with it. But yet he doesn't want to be blamed either. And Jameis, you know, I put this out there on Twitter, and this is where some of the family members got mad, et cetera. But Jameis was that guy that would willingly and really even happily, he's kind of weird like that. Like, he's happy to take the bullets for people. And Jameis would just happily take all the bullets for Bruce and all the bullets for Arians. He just kind of felt like that was his thing, and that's what he was supposed to do. That's the way his dad raised him, et cetera. Even Clyde Christensen, the quarterback's coach, talked about that in an interview and kind of laughed and said, you know, it's wild the plays that Arians would send in and the things that he would ask Jameis to do, but Jameis would just never say no. Brady, though, is the exact opposite. And you know, Brady's going to do what Brady wants to do, and you're not going to really convince the media to turn on Brady when they can turn on Arians. And so the whole dynamic kind of changed. And so now I'm thinking, you know, Bruce is looking at this as kind of Super Bowl or bust, too, because I'll also say that I think the Saints is the worst draw that Tampa could have hoped for, not just from a play perspective, not just that the Saints are a better team, but had the Rams lost and the Bucs gone up to Green Bay and got beat. I don't really think that affects Arians at all. I don't think it affects his job security, none of that. The Packers are the number one seed. It's not a big deal. But if they go to Tampa, if they go to New Orleans and they lose for the third time in 1 year, everybody inside that organization, and especially Tom Brady, is going to look at Bruce Arians like, dude, you're the problem. You don't match up with Sean Payton. You're the weak link. And it wouldn't shock me if the Bucs lose, if Brady goes to the Glazers and says, I want Josh McDaniels in here.
Ooh.
I don't believe that this guy, I don't believe he can get over the Sean Payton hump.
See, well, that's
let's
spicy.
Talk about,
I like that.
Yeah, that is spicy. That's, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. We'll see how that plays out. You look at so many different passer metrics, just high level. And I know football is obviously so much more than just the quarterbacks, but it is a quarterback league. We've got two guys over 40 this Sunday, Brady versus Breeze. Can you kind of just quickly assess for us the level of play of each passer right now and which one you think is better?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting comparison because they're so incredibly different. You know, the way that they go about beating you, it's kind of like, you know, a point guard in basketball that just backs everybody down like an old Mark Jackson or Gary Payton, you know, compared to a Steph Curry that's going to bomb threes on you. You know, Breeze, it's all mental. You know, everything is quick reads, intelligence. Brady does actually still rely on his arm quite a bit. You know, he won't take a lot of the risks, say that a guy like Jameis would, but he still relies on his arm a lot more than what Drew Brees does. So as far as like who's better, it's obvious, like when you watch the two, Brady has the better arm, But I think Breeze has always been an amazing decision maker. I think he obviously understands the offense he's in still better than even what Brady's doing, because while Brady's still while Brady's trying to run his own plays all the time, he's getting guys up to speed that aren't doing that. You know, they're used to Arian's system more so than they are to Brady's. So in this game, I definitely would take Breeze over Brady. I think Breeze will have a much better game in his system with his guys than Brady will. And if you look at their careers, you know, they've played seven times against each other in the NFL. Breeze is 5-2. I think he has like an 18-touchdown-to-1 interception ratio, where Brady's like 9 touchdowns to 11 picks. I mean, it hasn't been close. Breeze has been the far superior quarterback when they've matched up head-to-head. And then a lot of people will say, okay, yeah, but that's all regular season. In the playoffs, that's when Brady really shines through. No, it's not. Brady drops in the playoffs. If you look at like his career regular season passer rating to playoffs and some of the other metrics, his game declines in the playoffs. Breeze is the exact opposite. Breeze's passer rating jumps up in the playoffs. And when you just compare the two quarterbacks, in basically every advanced metric you can find, Breeze bests Brady in career playoff numbers. Passer rating, completion percentage, touchdown percentage, interception percentage, yard per attempt, AYA, YA, YC, YG, NYA, NEA, all of it. Breeze bests Brady in like everything that you can find in career playoff numbers. Just and yet, play, you know, you tell that to people, advocate. And their response is simply, "Well, Brady's got 6 Super Bowl rings." Yeah, okay, he's on a team. It's a team sport.
Just to play devil's advocate, how much do you think of a difference it makes playing in the Superdome during the playoffs versus playing in Boston in January at home?
I think it would have a lot to do with like how many attempts you're asked to throw by your coach. I don't necessarily know that it would change, you know, for example, yards per completion, yards per attempt, NYA, NEA, stuff like that. Some of the advanced metrics, I don't think it's really going to have that big of an effect on. I think it would have an effect on just your counting stats, your attempts, your yards, stuff like that. But when you're talking about advanced metrics, a lot of times weather doesn't play into it all that much like it does with counting stats.
Football is in full effect, with many teams strutting their stuff. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any other place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Is Brady, with Tampa's weapons that they have, it still seems to me, one-of-one, that Brady, he is a guy now where he basically turns into, like, Blake Bortles if you get even a modicum of pressure on him. Like, it is start, like the splits where you get pressure on him and you don't. And I know, look, any quarterback, you don't get pressure on him. Any quarterback worth their salt is going to perform at an incredibly high level. But most quarterbacks that are elite, like, you got to put pressure on them consistently. It's got to be 20, 30, 40% pressure before they fall apart. Brady, you get pressure on him like 20% of the time, 25% of the time. He falls apart and becomes Blake Bortles. What you've seen, why do you think that is with him? What makes him? Is it age? Is it like, because you said his arm's still good? So what's made him become just a pumpkin when he gets even a little bit of pressure on him?
Yeah, I would say actually that's sort of an insult to the great Blake Bortles there. you know, because Blake's a big boy. He's got some athleticism. He can escape some pressure. But you're right. Brady crumbles under pressure, and it's not just what people are seeing in Tampa. I think a lot of people are paying more attention to him in Tampa because his stats are up and he's got these great receivers. But last year in 2019, he had the worst completion percentage under pressure in the entire NFL. The next worst was Jacoby Brissett. Then you're talking about guys like Kyle Allen.
Ooh.
Like Tom Brady's at 36%. 36%. And the next worst was Jacoby Brissett at 40.3, which is actually a big jump from 36. So Brady's been terrible under pressure for a while now. And I do think a lot of it is age. I think a lot of it is him prolonging his career. You know, I always considered it kind of one of the Manning boys' greatest strengths was that when they were about to get sacked, they would just drop like they were dead. And, they, you know, it allowed them to prolong their career. And Brady is kind of like that now, too, but he'll also airmail balls out of bounds and things like that. Yeah, I think he hates, you know, inside pressure. And with the Saints, they're one of the few teams that really can wreck Tampa's line. You know, Tampa Bay had a terrible line last year, but drafting Tristan Wirfs was a huge upgrade from Damar Dotson. Huge. And bringing in Gronk as a blocking tight end and to chip block and stuff was huge for their offensive line. And yet when they play the Saints, they get wrecked. And, I mean, you just – had Tom Brady not played the Saints this year and there had been a 14-game schedule, he very might have well have won MVP. You know, but against the Saints, he looked like garbage. And I mean, I don't expect that to change. It could, you know. Antonio is another weapon that you've got to worry about. I just think the Saints really match up well with them. You know, when you just look at the 11 guys the Saints can put on the field, no matter what package Tampa puts out there, they just match up really, really well. There's not an immediate weakness, and especially because you don't need to spy Brady, you don't need to really need to use a linebacker or a safety to watch him. They've got an extra guy, kind of, because Tom's not going anywhere. He's a statue in the pocket.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Searching for NBA playoff coverage? We've got you. The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, gives you an inside look into the world of sports. Hosted by former NBA sharpshooter and Duke legend J.J. Redick and sports writer Tommy Alter, The Old Man and the Three offers unprecedented access to the league. Tommy and JJ discuss the NBA and interview some of the biggest names in the league, like Devin Booker and Luka Doncic. NBA final season is the perfect time to dive in, and you can listen to The Old Man and the Three wherever you get your podcasts. To hear episodes brought to you by BMW. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, let's talk about this game. So from a matchup perspective, and, you know, one of one, obviously, we as Saints fans, it's hard to kind of separate what we believe just in terms of the X's and O's versus just the PTSD of the last 3 years and how the playoffs have ended for us. And so I think there's a, you know, I think Ralph a lot of times is just wrapped. The closer we get to the game, he becomes wrapped in a cocoon of fear based on what's happened.
That is
recently.
Accurate. That is accurate.
Yeah. But can you assess, like, from an outsider looking at these two teams and someone that has been really interested and watched a lot of these two teams over the last 2 years, can you tell us, your opinion on this matchup and who you think is favored and who you like to win.
I think the matchup favors New Orleans heavily. I actually was kind of surprised when the Vegas line came out there, Saints by 3, which is really just a standard home field advantage for any team. So Vegas is basically saying they think these teams are even on a neutral field. I mean, what two games did they watch this year? You know, the Saints handled them in the first game. It was 34-23, but easily could have been, should have been 41-23 with that Kamara touchdown at the end that was kind of called back. And then the second game, where Brady had a bunch of the season and he had his guys, Antonio played too, they got beat 38-3. I mean, that was embarrassing and it was kind of shocking. And so people are looking at, you know, Tampa's last five games and they're saying, well, they must have flipped a switch. Really? They played the Falcons twice. You know, they played the Lions. They played another trash team. And then they got the Redskins, the easiest draw in all the playoffs. So they've played
Minnesota.
Minnesota, there you go. So they haven't had a quality opponent in these five games where people think they flipped the switch. And I think that also sort of hurts Tampa because they're talking. I mean, you see some of the comments that their players are making. They're chirping. They feel good about where they're at, and they're starting to feel dominant. But they beat up on five bad teams. And now all of a sudden they're playing what I consider the best top-to-bottom roster in the NFL, also with an elite coach. So it feels to me like, you know, Tampa's going to get smacked. You fellas know, and most people that follow me know, you know, I don't consider myself necessarily a team fan. I enjoy every game, and no matter the outcome. You know, I said this earlier to a Bucks guy. I was like, hey, if Tampa wins 52-0, I'm not going to be mad. If Tampa loses 52-0, I'm not going to be mad. I enjoy every game, and I just love to see the competition. But as an outsider, if I was betting, yeah, I'd bet heavy on the Saints. I don't know anybody that wouldn't. It doesn't make sense. There's nothing that we've seen to make anybody think that Tampa's going to win this game. Nothing. If they do, I'm going to feel terrible for Breeze because I think this for sure is his last year, whereas I think Brady will come back next year, and who knows, Brady might play a few more years. I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see Tampa winning this game.
Well, I hope you're right. I certainly, you're making me feel better, so I appreciate that.
Me too. I like that.
Yeah. So speaking of next year, one of one, I want to ask you, and I don't know if you have internal information on this or if you're allowed to share it with us, but you know, I go back to a play last week where Taysom Hill, there was a shot play called, and it was kind of a microcosm of his whole season, really, at least when he had time playing quarterback and when he was a starter. You know, this is a shot play where he takes a snap, he has a nine-man box, Deontay Harris is running a fly, and it's just a prototypical Taysom Hill play where you just feel like, man, you've got the one-on-one matchup. You've got to trust that Deontay Harris can beat any DB in a foot race. Just get rid of the football. Go, let your playmaker go make that play and just make the throw. And there's no safety help there. And yet he has to see it. And so he continues to climb the pocket. And eventually Deontay Harris starts to get significant separation. And then he tries to throw it. But by then it's too late. He gets hit. There's the fumble and there's the turnover. So That to me is kind of, as I've watched Taysom Hill, I've grown more and more, I don't want to say convinced because people can improve and get changed, but I've become more and more uncomfortable with the idea that he's the starting quarterback next year. Speaking of the offseason with Jameis, what are the odds of him coming back to New Orleans? And what do you think is going to, how is that all going to shake out this offseason?
I haven't changed really my tone on that at all. 2 weeks before he signed with the Saints, I did an interview, and I told the guy that was interviewing me, watch for the Saints. The Saints is the perfect spot. Jameis signed with them 2 weeks later, and I've said since that day till now, nothing that Sean Payton has done has upset me at all. I'm like, my level of trust and respect for Payton has done nothing but grown, and I like the guy even before Jameis signed there. But people, you know, they'll DM me or they'll get a hold of me on Twitter and they'll say, you know, oh, well, Peyton's this and this and this, and how can he do this to Jameis? And I said, you don't understand. You know, Jameis knew the situation going in. He knew that Taysom had been promised to start if Breeze got hurt. He everything that was done as far as Jameis signing, there was all with the eye on 2021. It had nothing to do with 2020. No. If Jameis wanted to put up numbers, he just would have signed with the Jags and started from day one and put up more numbers on a bad team. Jameis signed with the Saints, and it was all about 2021. So, yeah, I feel great about Jameis' future in New Orleans. I think he made a really wise decision signing with them over the Jags and over the Steelers. Yeah, I know there's another report that came out yesterday about how Belichick was all in and the Patriots and blah, blah, blah. But I'm not talking about that because we'll see where Jameis ends up at the end of the year. But I feel great about New Orleans for Jameis. You know, from everything that I know, he's thrilled with everybody there, like everybody. So I have no worries about that. And as far as Taysom goes, you know, I think Sean, even the Lock and Fora report on CBS, you know, about how Sean is excited to re-sign Jameis and bring Taysom back because he views Taysom more in that role. And that makes perfect sense. You know, Sean's not stupid. He's a genius. And I know people like Taysom. I like Taysom. I love watching him play. He's fun. I mean, he's a lot of fun to watch.
No doubt, yeah.
But when you look at his games and you watch everything and you just think about him as a pure QB1, it doesn't really make any sense. People call him the Mormon Tebow or whatever. Well, no, he's better. He's like a souped-up Tebow. You know, he's a better pure passer. He has more, you know, passing talent. But I did put out a tweet, you know, comparing the two, and Tebow had a 4-week start like Taysom did in 2017, you know, and he totaled like 3,528 yards, 20 touchdowns, 4 picks, 16 fumbles. So you can say 20 touchdowns and 20 turnover plays. Taysom in his 4 games was at 3,336 passing yards, 32 total touchdowns, 32 total turnover plays with 8 interceptions and 24 fumbles. So they actually compare quite a bit to each other. I think Taysom is just more athletic and has the better arm, so he can do more things. And to me, what Taysom proved this year is that he's a legit QB2, which, you know, Taysom fans will hear as an insult, but really everybody should hear that as a compliment, because coming into this year, people looked at him around the league anyways, outside of New Orleans, as a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, they thought he was just some weird experiment and didn't belong, you know, and should never throw a pass. But Taysom proved he's an absolutely legit QB2 that can fill in a pinch and win games. And so that's magnificent. And then you combine that with everything else he does. He's worth that money. I know a lot of people are kind of, you know, wigged out about the contract. He's worth it. I mean, you take a QB2 and then you also add in, say, like a tight end 3 and a running back 3 and everything else he does, he's worth his money.
And I said this to Andrew. I think the way that it's played out has worked out perfect for the long-term future of the Saints, in a sense of if Drew had played the whole year, maybe Sean is like, hey, Jameis, we're going to give Taysom the first shot next year. Well, now they have this information. They have 4 games plus the playoff. It's just one throw, but it's a consistent thing with him where he doesn't make he doesn't process fast enough and he doesn't make the throws right. I think the Saints have enough information to where at the very least – they're going to say, Taysom, you can be part of the competition with Winston, but there's no way Sean Payton is saying Taysom is my guy and he's handing him the keys and he's going to be the main quarterback in 2021. There's just no way, because that would, if Sean Payton did that, he would be stupid. And you could say whatever you want about Sean Payton, arrogant, you know, whatever. He's not stupid. So, one of one, I just think this season, like you said, it has worked out not as well as it. I mean, if Freeze would have got hurt and Taysom would have been bad and Winston would be the starter now and the Saints would be winning, maybe that would have been a better scenario. But short of that, this season to me has gone splendidly for Jameis, to where he's going to get a legitimate shot if he wants it with the Saints, if they can work out the finances. I don't think he could have asked for anything better. And I don't think the Saints to be on the verge of a quarterback transition, to be in the spot they're at, they could be a lot worse off in where they are in the transition. So I think Jameis, I think the Saints are in a good spot, and I'm still very excited about Jameis. I was excited when I thought he was going to start. I still think he's going to be. It's going to be really interesting, and I'm going to be a little bit sad if somebody swoops in and like offers him a ton of money that the Saints can't match, and he goes somewhere else. And which if you'd have told me that before the season started, I'd have been very surprised. But now if Jameis isn't part of the Saints in 2021, I'm going to admit I'm going to be a little bit sad.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think the season went perfectly for Jameis. I think the season also basically transpired perfectly for Sean Payton because he did get that extended look at Taysom, which is that's the guy he needed the extended look at. You know, I've had a lot of people DM me and say, well, you know, how can they go with Jameis? They haven't seen him. Really? They've had you've got 5 years tape on Jameis. He's the reigning passing champ. Well, I mean, now the season's over. He was the 2019 passing champ. I mean, there's tons of tape on Jameis. You can put in, you know, his two games last year on a torn meniscus and broken hand where he throws back-to-back 450-yard, four-touchdown games, and they're both wins. I mean, Sean Payton didn't need to see Jameis at all. He needed to see Taysom. He needed to see Taysom be the guy in extended action, and he did. And I think it helped Taysom because, again, I think it justifies his contract for next year. It justified his value. It proves how valuable he is. I mean, there's nobody else in the NFL that I can think of, and maybe ever outside of like a guy like Cordell Stewart, stuff like that, that is a legitimate QB2, that is also a legitimate, you know, tight end 3 and all these other things Taysom can do. So he earned his money, not just for this year, but for next year. And, yeah, from a Jameis perspective, I think it worked out perfectly. I don't think he was upset at all, you know, about anything that happened. You know, what you say, though, yeah, it is true. I mean, the Saints have a very tricky salary cap situation. And there's a lot of teams that are out there that are probably going to just miss out, you know, like on this quarterback carousel. There's only four guys that are legitimate first-round prospects. You know, Mac Jones could sneak in. Kyle Trask could sneak in. I don't have either one of those guys as a first-round prospect. I think both of them are, you know, actual backup-level guys that could start in the right situation. But there's a ton of teams that are going to miss out on quarterbacks, and three of them are all in the AFC. And, you know, the Patriots, who the report came out, they're done with Cam. The Colts, if Rivers retires as expected, and the Steelers, if Big Ben retires, which he very well might. I think that it could come where they're sort of ushering him out the door because they'll get $19 million cap savings if he doesn't resign. And he'll get his $22.5 million regardless. So, and with his boy Pouncey retiring, who they said they'd retire together, that could happen. So if those three teams, the Patriots, the Colts, the Steelers, all quality organizations, the Steelers wanted Jameis last offseason. He chose New Orleans instead. But if those three teams are all in the market for a quarterback, none of them have a high enough pick to get a starter in the draft.
And plus Chicago.
Who's out there? You know, who's out there? Mitch Trubisky? That's going to be the cream of the free agent quarterback crop? Are you kidding me? So if all three of them come calling for Jameis, then he has a decision to make. But I would love to see him stay with the Saints. I'd love to see him stay with Sean Payton. You know, I think there's even like a spiritual connection there, if I can say that, just between how Breeze got there, you know, kind of being cast off from his first team and an injury and, you know, having surgery in the same center that Jameis was in, all that stuff. I think it's a perfect spot. So I'd be thrilled if Jameis stays in New Orleans long term.
Give us a percentage chance Jameis returns in black and gold next year.
Well, I mean, I'm not God, so whatever I say, take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, I mean, I'll say 70%, and ooh, it would be higher. Like it's just that the salary cap situation is sticky. I mean, I trust Mickey Loomis. I think he's a genius. So, you know, we'll see what he can do with that. But when you look at it, just, you know, from afar, you just look at the numbers. It's kind of shocking. You know, like you see how far they are over the cap. You're like, wow, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
So, one of one, give us a score, and then we'll get out of here for the game Sunday.
All right. I will say 34-20 Saints.
Speak it into existence.
So, one of one, tell the people how they can find you on Twitter. I love following you because you just go at people in a nice way. but tell the people how they can find you on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. At Jameis, one of one. So J-A-M-E-I-S, the number one, O-F, the number one. And my book's on Amazon, and the e-book's pretty much everywhere. But yeah, I'm a fun follow, and I get into it with a lot of media and a lot of fans.
Well, guys, follow him on Twitter, and the way he talked now, it looks like we're going to have a great one. We're going to have the Saints win on Sunday, and we're going to have him back because Jameis is going to be a part of the 2021 Saints. Jameis, one of one, thanks for joining us. Guys, thanks for joining us. We will see you again tomorrow.